and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we're going to talk to Francesco Clark. And his book is called Walking Papers. He has a very unusual story, true story, The Accident That Changed My Life and The Business That Got Me Back on My Feet. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm just fine. I was a little nervous about this. I didn't know how you would react to my question, so it's okay to ask anything?
Of course, of course.
How are you feeling right now, even as we speak?
I feel relieved that the book is out and done, and I feel, it's kind of funny, because when I was first injured, I couldn't feel 99% of my body, but now I'm feeling, I can feel about 80% of my body now. I'm starting to feel my feet, I'm starting to feel my legs, my abs, I'm starting to use on my back, so, you know, asking me how I feel, it has many more meanings to me than maybe when you ask somebody just walking in the street.
You're like a walking miracle is what you are.
Well, you know, the way that I look at it is that you would do the same. You would, you know, when you're faced with something like that and doctors tell you you're never going to do this, you're never going to do that, nothing is ever that definite, nothing is ever that set in stone. So I don't know. I just feel like you can't take no for an answer, and so I don't look at it like a miracle, because a lot of work and a lot of science went into my recovery, and it would kind of dismiss a lot of,
yeah, that's true,
a lot of everything that went into it. But
miracle in the sense that a lot of people would have given up being in your situation, but you didn't.
No, I did. I mean, I had no choice. I feel like, you know, with my family, my mother is very Italian, and she was just like, you have to get better. You know, like, and when I was first injured in the ICU, she turned to the doctor and then turned to me and said, move something. And I kind of twitched my shoulder a little bit. And she's like, okay, he's going to be fine. He doesn't agree with you. So kind of from that point on, it was about me kind of getting better and proving that spinal cord injury is not a death sentence.
Why don't you, and there are people who are listening out who are wondering what in the world happened to you. Why don't you explain exactly what did happen and what it felt like to go through that?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a summer share in Long Island in New York. Like a lot of people that work in New York City, you have, on the weekends, you just kind of want to get away. And I had rented a house with friends of friends of friends of friends. So they were complete strangers. And I got to the house, and it was a beautiful summer day, June 1st, and there was not a cloud in the sky, and just a nice kind of evening, and there was a pool at the house, and I get there, and I see the pool, and I dove in, and the second that I dove in, I realized I dove into the shallow end, and the second that I dove in, my chin hit the bottom of the pool, my head snapped back, and it completely shattered my C4 vertebrae, which is about 4 inches above that little bump in the back of your neck.
Right.
So my injury was maybe 3 inches below Christopher Reeve's spinal cord injury.
Hmm. Just hearing about it, I mean, I can't imagine what was going through your head as your head's hitting the bottom of the pool and you realize what you've done. I mean, I can't imagine the horror or of going through that. I mean, how in the world did you ever make it through that without, like, I just can't even imagine.
Well, I was angry. I got really angry with myself, and I felt like an idiot. I mean, I felt like the biggest idiot in the world, and because I've dove into hundreds of pools. I know how to dive. I know how to swim. I know how to, you know, it's kind of like you got out of the bathtub and you tripped. You feel like an idiot. So, my first reaction was anger, and it felt like a parent scolding their child. Kind of like, do you realize how much therapy you're going to have to do? You know, this is going to take years for you to get better, and that kind of thing. And then fight or flight kicked in, and fight definitely kicked in. And then it was weird because I was very calm, and this was in the police report, too, when the ambulance had picked me up, and I was telling everybody what to do. You know, I was telling them to stabilize my neck and...
Really?
Yeah. So I was kind of telling them, like, call 911, you do this, you do that. And it was kind of my way of dealing, my coping mechanism with what had just happened to me, to go from, you know, kind of being 24 years old, having just gotten promoted, you know, buying my first apartment in the city, to suddenly not being able to breathe on my own, is such a shock to anyone that you really don't know how you're going to react. So I really didn't know the way that I was going to react, and I'm glad that, I mean, I guess it was appropriate for me to react in that way, especially because I didn't know the people that I was with, so it was appropriate for me to kind of take control of the situation.
What was your pain level at that point? I mean, were you in unbearable pain, or were you feeling a lot of pain or a little pain, or what?
Well, it's funny because when you think of paralysis and you think of numbness, you actually don't think of pain. But when I first had the injury, it felt like two pieces of metal kind of hitting each other, and that loud clank that you might kind of imagine, that's what I felt in my spine. And it kind of echoed throughout my entire body. And I felt this incredible surge and pressure inside my spine at the site of the injury, and it just felt like a pressure cooker, and it felt like my spine was just going to kind of burst open. But I think that with all the adrenaline kind of pumping through my body, and just the shock, that it didn't register, and I didn't really feel anything except for this kind of sense of, I guess, like a sense of failure, even though it wasn't my fault and it was an accident. It kind of felt like, oh, what am I going to do now? That's kind of what it felt like. And that sense of terror and fear kind of overcame any sort of pain that I felt.
I mean, you read the book and you think, how does somebody get through something like this? How? I mean, the nights where you just must, I mean, I can't even imagine what it's been like for you. It's been, what, 7 years now?
Eight
years now. And, I mean, what you went through after that, I mean, the years of therapy that you've had, and where did your sense of not giving up come from? Is that something that was instilled in your family from an early age?
You know, it's funny because a lot of people ask me that, and a lot of people will segue from that to, like, do you think this happened for a reason? The thing is that with this injury, I'm very much the same as I was from before my injury. My friends, you know, attest to that, and they're just like, you know, you laugh at the same jokes, you like the same things, you like doing the same kinds of fun things that you did before. There's an entire other element to life that I didn't see before, which I see now because of my injury. I think I had to make a choice, and I think that the choice was, do I give up or do I stay Francesco? You know, do I stay myself? And when I was in the ICU, there was a patient in the room next to mine, and he had a higher likelihood of surviving than I had when I first got there.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some sort of cancer, I don't remember, but after a couple days there, and I was very aware of the fact that of his condition and my own condition, and then after a couple days, just hearing him kind of scream from pain and kind of hearing that very brutal, guttural, very kind of, I don't know, it was just like, it sounded like an animal pleading to live or die. And
sounds horrifying.
Yeah, it was. That was actually very horrifying with the ICU, is because you're just faced with death all the time. And it was interesting because at that time, my left lung was totally collapsed. I was on a ventilator and I couldn't speak. But they were giving me these breathing exercises to do, and I hated them. I mean, I absolutely hated these breathing exercises. I had to blow into this little tube and make this little kind of plastic ball float into this cup. You know, you're supposed to do it for 2 hours. I could do it maybe for a minute. So my best friend, Alex, and my sister Charlotte brought in this little boom box, and they played, he had an ABBA, like, greatest hit CD on. So he put that in, and I just started singing at the top of my lungs, and that was kind of one of the turning points in my time in the ICU, but also since my injury, when I would use this ridiculous kind of humor to kind of alleviate the sense of despair. And I didn't care if I was making a fool of myself, and I didn't care kind of what other people thought of it, but it kind of made things more lighthearted, even in the ICU. And that's kind of, I parlayed that into every aspect of my recovery. So now when I'm doing therapy, you know, I'm also listening to the radio, I'm also working, I'm doing a lot of other things. Like, I make sure that I have fun while I work on my recovery.
Do you think that the accident enriched your life in some way? I mean, as a result, you seem, I mean, it has changed, and I don't know what you were like before that, but you seem like such a positive person now, and it seems like that just from reading the book, it seems like that your accident has made you such a more of a positive person, and that's kind of what I'm asking. Do you think it has done that to you?
I think that, I mean, I'm definitely not always positive. I mean, I'm not.
What are your worst fears right now, even as we speak?
My worst fears? I guess my worst fears now are similar to what they were before, is being lonely. You know, like, I think most people think that.
But you have so many friends, so many people who care about you. That must be a great feeling.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, that's one of the main reasons why I'm getting better, is that I have this amazing family. I mean, my mother, my father, my grandmother, my sister, my brother, and my sister-in-law, my niece, and my nephew. It's like, I have this incredible support group, and then my friends, that it's nearly impossible for me to not, you know, be in touch with somebody who cares about me, and for them to not be concerned and want me to get better. So I have this kind of like, I have a group of really wonderful cheerleaders kind of that are always cheering me on.
Were there any friends, and I don't mean this in a bad way or anything, but were there any friends that wouldn't speak to you after the accident? I mean, did anybody shun away from you out of fear of what it would be like? Or I think some people are just afraid to be in the same room with somebody who they don't know how to help. You know what I mean?
I think that is the case at first. I think at first, people don't know how to react to, you know, their best friend who was running 7 miles a day and lifting weights and rowing, to suddenly seeing them, you know, sitting 4 feet high in a wheelchair and not being able to breathe or scratch their forehead. So there's that definite first reaction where you don't know what to say, but that goes away pretty quickly because I don't shut up. I mean, I try to kind of break the ice, and I try to, you know, talk through it. And I think that at first there's that sense of, as a friend and you're visiting somebody else who went through this trauma, that you just want them to not feel what they're feeling. But in my case, I would just be like, God, can you believe this happened? And then we would just start talking about it, and then kind of...
And you don't want pity, I mean, or somebody feeling sorry for you, do you?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm treated the same as I was before, and
right.
It's interesting because I did lose contact with some people, but I think that was because I just wasn't interacting with them because of work. So they probably would not have been in my life regardless. But in terms of good friends, I have pretty much the same friends as I had before, which is actually a testament to how great of people they are.
How did it come about that this book got published? Did Hyperion talk to you about doing the book, or how did it come about?
I'm definitely not a writer, so I didn't know the process for writing a book. And I didn't know, you know, I didn't know what it meant to have a literary agent. I didn't know what it meant to approach a publisher. So I just started writing. I just started writing because it was therapeutic, it was cathartic. It made me feel good. It made me appreciate what I had. And
did it help?
Yeah, it helped a lot.
That's great.
It really kind of put things in perspective in a way that I didn't realize it would. It was very difficult to relive everything, and then in the editing process to kind of read it over and over and edit it a lot. That was hard. But so I wrote about 78 pages, and then on a lark, I just kind of emailed this agent who's very well known, Carol Mann, in New York City, and then she read it, liked it, and then we met, and I kind of made a very simple goal for myself of writing 2 pages a day, which is not a lot, and most writers kind of scoff at that, but 2 pages a day is little, it's not that much, so that in a day, even if it feels like a bad day for writing, you can get through it.
Right.
But if you're kind of on a roll, you still get through it pretty quickly. By the end of the week, it's 14 pages, and then it adds up quickly. Also, I was kind of writing about something that was heavy to me, and I didn't want to make it overly sad or not. I wanted it to be balanced on kind of what my life had become. So I wanted to keep a very kind of short goal and make sure that I kept to that goal.
What I'm wondering is, you said that you have use of 80% of your body, which is amazing to me, but what did the doctors say? What was their idea of how much you would get to use your body over time, or didn't they know?
Well, to be honest with you, they didn't know. But what I was told was, you are probably going to die tonight, and then you are going to die tonight, and then you're never going to breathe on your own, and you're never going to forget about your arms, forget about your legs. You are going to be in a ventilator. God, what else was I told?
That's amazing. That's scary.
That's kind of enough. You know, there's enough right there to.
But you didn't give up. I mean, you're an inspiration that way. I mean, that sense of never giving up never seems to have left you, and it's so admirable.
The thing is that thank you very much. But there's this one sense of I proved them wrong.
You certainly did.
For about like 2 weeks, and with one little thing, like I'm twitching my shoulder, right, in the ICU, and then I'm kind of like, well, if I can twitch my shoulder, then I can probably do something else, and then if I could do that, then they could be wrong about everything. And then I realized, I mean, you know, my father's a doctor, my sister's a doctor, and because of that, I have this, I kind of understand that just because they are medical doctors, it doesn't mean it's the end-all, be-all kind of, you know, what you're being told as a patient, it's not always the complete truth of what is going to happen to you. And there's that sense of fallacy and kind of there's that human element that I knew about medicine that I feel like some patients might not know. So I had that sense of kind of, I don't know.
Well, you're definitely a survivor. I mean, a survivor times 1,000. I mean, if you listen to the doctors, you know, when your mind was set that you were going to die, you might have just given up.
If I had accepted what was told to me, then I wouldn't be doing all the therapy that I'm doing, and I wouldn't have gone to, you know, I wouldn't have done all these kind of experimental procedures and the research that I'm doing. I wouldn't be doing all of that.
Now, you're still doing therapy even as we speak today?
Yeah. Yes. I'm doing about 5 hours a day. And
5 hours a day?
Yeah. But you know what? It's fine what's funny about it is that I was so active before.
Right.
That it's a complete natural evolution for me. I mean, I was working out a lot before. I love being outdoors, I love being active, and I'm kind of maintaining that. So it feels, and it's such a big stress relief for me to, I have this bike that I pedal with my arms and my legs. For me to pedal this bike, you know, for 2.5 hours a day, you know, and I'll be working while I'm doing that, it's just normal. It's just kind of what I do. It's part of my day, and I feel great when I do it. So that's kind of an added bonus. It doesn't feel like a chore. It doesn't feel like work.
Now, what can't you do? I mean, give me an example of something that we would take for granted today that you can't do right now.
So, at 2:30 in the morning, you're in bed, and it's July, August, whatever, and it's very hot outside, and you wake up and you just reach over for a glass of water, and you drink it. I can't do that. I wake up at, 2:30, whatever, whenever I wake up, and I'm literally just looking at that glass of water, and it feels like torture sometimes. I can't do that.
You talk in the book about being ravenously hungry and not being able to eat things. I can't imagine that feeling. I mean, what do we take for granted in this world it just amazes me. I mean, when I read this, I think I shouldn't complain about anything.
No, that's not true. I mean, God, I complain about a lot of things, and everybody has the right to complain. But it's what's kind of ironic about the whole thing.
But I mean, compared to what you've been through, I feel like I should never complain.
Everybody, I mean, at some point, everybody's going to have to deal with some sort of hardship.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. I mean, we're human. Who cares? Like, you can complain. Anybody can complain. It's just kind of like we all have our bad days and our good days.
But I think what I'm trying to get at is we don't appreciate what we do have. How many of us really appreciate what we have, the simple things that we have, the simple things that we can do? We always complain about the heat or something, that seems ridiculously silly.
Yeah.
But that it does affect us in a small way. I mean, we look back on it and think, well, what do I complain so much for? When there are people out there that are suffering, even as we speak, they're suffering.
It's funny because, I mean, I've been injured for 8 years now, and it's difficult for me to describe what it feels like to have a spinal cord injury. It's hard to explain what it feels like to not fully feel your legs. It's difficult to explain what it feels like to look at your hand and to want to move your fingers, but they just don't move.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still incomprehensible to me, a lot of it. And as much as I've thought about it in writing walking papers and speaking, with the Reef Foundation, at events and things like that, it's still hard for me to fully understand what happened to me and what my body is right now. But what's interesting about it is that as I get back more feeling and as I get back more movement, that feels completely normal and that feels completely natural. So I started to use my wrists a couple months ago and my triceps and my abs. And as I started to use my wrist, I just kind of like twitched and it started working. And it just feels normal. I'm kind of like, oh, that's cool. Well, that's what it felt like before. And then I just start, like, twitching it uncontrollably because it's, like, the new muscle that I get back, so I wanted to get strong. And so it's kind of funny because I complain, I complain about not having ice cream when I want ice cream. It's kind of like,
yeah.
I don't know, we're all human. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's been amazing, and your sense of really wanting to help others is amazing to me. I mean, you could have just said, "Well, this is all for me, and I want to find out everything to make me better." But you really, really have this drive to help others, which is really nice. I wish everybody felt like that.
It's funny because I personally feel like you can only get so far if you're only out for yourself. You can only get so far in whatever you want to do if you're only doing it for some sort of selfish reason.
Absolutely.
Of course, mm-hmm. There is that selfish part of me that's like, I just want to get up and walk to Starbucks. I just want to get up and wait in line at the movie theater.
Do you believe you're going to walk someday? Fully walk?
No, yeah. I mean, of course, because with all of the research that we're seeing with spinal cord injury research, it's empirical data that's showing that they are regenerating nerves. They are regenerating axons in the spinal cord. I'm getting back new feeling and movement in my body. So why wouldn't I push that, to use my abs even more, to use my back even more, to ultimately, walk. I mean, it's not the goal of my life. I'm not living to walk, but it's just part of it. That's kind of one of the aspects that is going to happen in my life.
And this jasmine stuff that helps your skin, I want some of that. Where in the world does somebody get that? I mean, that's such a wonderful. I mean, everybody that you've given it to seems to be a miracle. Where does the average person get that stuff?
Well, Clark's Botanicals. I mean, you can order it on our website, clarksbotanicals.com.
Oh, okay.
We're at Saxis Avenue. We're at Fred Siegel in Los Angeles, in California, and we're kind of, it's a very small company, and we're very lucky in that we're very supported by our customer base. I mean, it started because of my injury. My skin stopped sweating. So my father and I started to kind of formulate products for a selfish reason that I just wanted to look good again. I wanted to look the way that I felt. I didn't want people to look at me and only kind of notice a wheelchair. I wanted them to look at me and want to talk to me. So the day that Christopher Reeve passed away, I kind of...
And how long has it been since he passed away?
5 years? Yeah.
5 years? Okay. It's hard to remember because it seems like yesterday, and yet it's not. It's been a while.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of, and it was so sudden when it happened.
But, did you meet him, by the way?
What was that?
Did you ever meet him?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay. It's not in the book, and I wondered, I was curious whether you'd ever actually met him.
Yep, I met him right after I left Mount Sinai. I met him at a function up in Westchester, a charity event.
And what was he like to you, and how did he seem?
He was kind of one of those people that is very sharp and seems like he has a photographic memory, and he gave a speech and was very eloquent to the point, knew every single fact about the research that he was talking about. And then I went up to him afterwards and kind of exchanged a couple of words, and he was very, very nice. But it was like he was being swarmed by everybody there. So it felt like it was a bigger moment. It felt like one of those kind of times in your life when you're talking to someone who's bigger than life, kind
right.
of thing.
Sort of like Madonna.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But he was different because, like, he really impacted my life even before my injury. I mean, he was one of my heroes before I even had my spinal cord injury. So it was important to me that I get involved with, you know, the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, especially after he passed away, because he was the biggest advocate for people with disabilities. He was the biggest advocate to find a cure, but also to fund the care for people with spinal cord injuries.
You know, reading the book, I just instantly fall in love with your family. I mean, the support and the love that they've given you is just out of this world. I mean, I can't imagine how wonderful that must have been for you, and still is. I'm sure they're still like that.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, we've always been very closely knit. You know, and of course, because of the injury, we came together much more. But it's like everybody, I definitely would not be where I am today if it wasn't for my family.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years from now?
God, nobody has asked me that. Let's see, at 42, where will I be?
What do you think? I mean, do you think you'll be closer to 90%?
Yeah, definitely. I actually think I'll be closer to 90% in the next 5 years.
You're just all positive energy. It just flows off of you. I mean, you say that you have bad days. Do you have days where you're totally negative?
Yeah.
What do you do to stop that? What do you do to combat that?
I use humor a lot to kind of...
And that helps.
Yeah, it helps. I talk, you know, I'm very vocal. I talk a lot. And if I'm having a bad day, I'll talk about it with my mom or my dad or my sister or my brother. I mean, it's just, I'm very... And plus, I'm the kind of person that wears my heart on my sleeve. I would never be able to hide an emotion.
Were you like that before you had the accident?
Yeah.
So you've always been like that. You've always been an open person.
Yeah, but, I mean, now it's kind of like...
I mean, how many men out there suffering in silence, you know, that don't want to talk about it with their families and don't want to talk about it with their friends? It's sad. It's very sad that they can't do that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And yet you're able to. You're able to talk to anybody and be honest with anybody, and that's got to be very relieving. and very...
I mean, as much as it is a relief, it still hurts when you have a bad day. I mean, you don't... You know, there are those days that I'm just like, oh, I just want to go out to eat alone. I just want to go do this alone. And that's when sometimes it kind of like, you know, you realize the injury a lot because everything becomes a production. But 99% of the time, that's not the case.
How is your business doing, Clark's Botanicals? I mean, and how many different products do you have, and how is it doing?
It's doing well. We have 13 products right now, and we're growing. We just launched in Russia and China. We're going to be launching in the UK the next couple months. We're very kind of slow and steady, and we always make sure that any product that we launch is in line with what our customers want, and every ingredient has to have a reason to be in there, and there has to be a synergy between all of the ingredients in each product, so that at the end of the day, your skin looks good. Because when you're buying a skincare product, it doesn't matter if it's natural, if it's not natural, whatever it is you're using, you're buying it because you want to look better and you want your skin to be healthy and look good. And Clark's Botanicals, you know, as simple as the idea sounds, we don't use parabens, which are preservatives that have been shown to elevate estrogen levels in women that lead to breast cancer. We don't use that. So we use the best of nature and the best of science with the ultimate goal of just having healthy, beautiful skin. So because of that, we kind of stay true to our kind of brand DNA, which is making products that work in a very kind of simple way. So we don't use outer packaging because we want to be friendly to the environment. We make sure to give back. Every product gives back to the Christopher Reeve Foundation. I do a lot of in-store appearances, so I speak to the customers directly myself, which I love doing. And that's it. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it started as a crazy idea, now it's a business.
And in the beginning, the forward, is that his son, Alexandra Reeve? Yeah.
Alexandra Reeve Givens is actually Christopher Reeve's daughter.
Oh, daughter. Okay.
Yeah.
And she did the forward to your book.
Yeah, and she's a good friend of mine, and Matthew Reeve, his eldest son, is a good friend. And we started a new committee called the Champions Committee with the Christopher Reeve Foundation, which is we have a lot of kind of New York City or tri-state area events, either in New York, Connecticut, or New Jersey, where we try to bring awareness to a younger demographic. Because the demographic for people who have spinal cord injuries are, you know, teenagers or in their early 20s. So we want to kind of bring the demographic to reflect that. And we want people to see what it means to have a spinal cord injury and to actually become involved in the foundation in either a very kind of simple way by donating money at a cocktail party or meeting us at that event and then maybe getting involved with Team Reeve and running a marathon or volunteering or anything. I mean, whatever people want.
You talk in the book about when you first came home and you realized how much work it was going to be for your family to take care of you. So you felt a tremendous amount of guilt about that. How did you overcome that?
I think that I overcame that by taking responsibility for my life and my injury and by little by little kind of gaining traction in becoming more financially independent and kind of acting more like an adult and not saying like, oh, poor me, but then to kind of, you know.
Did you go through an oh, poor me phase?
Yeah, yeah.
How long did that last?
Oh, God.
Or was it an ongoing thing? I mean.
I think it lasted 2 years.
Yeah,
You know, I think there's that element of.
But that never helps anybody, does it? Or does it? I mean, it never seems to.
It's hard to say because I think it's completely natural to become depressed and.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, who wouldn't in a situation that the you know what you've been through would depress anybody?
Yeah, I think you have to become very. You have to become introspective when you have something traumatic like that happened, because you're really redefining yourself and questioning yourself kind of from the ground up. So you have to, I don't know, you have to figure it out.
What's your goal with the product lines? Do you want to have at some point 100 different products?
I don't really work that way because, I mean, I never started Clark's Botanicals as a business. I just started it because I wanted my skin to look good again. So,
what does it look like today, even as we speak now?
Like I used to look. You know, it looks like just healthy skin. And what's interesting about it is that when you have a spinal cord injury, you're very attentive to your skin because you're always sitting. So a lot of times you'll develop bed sores or pressure sores. So your skin health becomes very important.
So you always have something to do, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I kept busy. But what's great about it is that Clark's Botanicals, when you think about beauty, when you think about skincare, many people look at it as they automatically assume that it's almost like a frivolous kind of business. But what I found is that this seemingly kind of frivolous and, I don't know, kind of business that's almost sometimes it's shunned as dumb is actually one of the things that made my life more interesting and I'm able to give back to medical research. So, you know, when I have a 14-year-old woman that's buying our new ultra-rich lip tint, when she reads about the products, then she finds out what a spinal cord injury means. And when she buys the lip tint, she's inadvertently donating to spinal cord injury research. So it's about getting people involved that normally wouldn't be involved and kind of opening the consciousness for other people.
If you hadn't had your accident, what do you think you'd be doing today? I mean, where do you think you'd be?
I think I'd just be working. I mean, I think I'd just be like, I definitely...
Obviously, your priorities changed before and after the accident. I mean, what was important to you then doesn't sound like it's important to you anymore. I mean, it sounds like you have different values.
I definitely was living my life according to a path that I had decided. You know, when you're in high school, you think, oh, I have to go to college. And then
right.
When you're in college, you think, oh, I'm either going to go to graduate school or get a job. And kind of I was living according to that path. So when I started working after I graduated, you know, I wanted to get promoted. And then I wanted to do this. And then it was kind of like looking at the next step. But it definitely wasn't, I wasn't doing anything groundbreaking or, you know, different from what other people are doing when they're 23, 24.
And look at the wonderful work you're doing now today. I mean, would you even have this company if you hadn't had the accident? I mean,
no, of course not.
No, and I mean, you're doing so much good for the world. I mean, you're trying to do as much as you possibly can to make things better for yourself and for others.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's got to be give you a great sense of satisfaction. I mean, you can wake up in the morning knowing you're doing important work.
Nah, I don't always think that way. I mean,
but it's true, isn't it true though?
I don't wake up thinking that I'm doing amazing work for.
But what I'm saying is, when you wake up, you must have some sense of satisfaction that what you're doing is helping others.
Yeah, I feel lucky, and I feel.
I'm not saying you have a big ego or anything. I'm not just saying that I would think it would make you feel good. I mean, when you wake up in the morning, you think about these things. You think about, well, what am I doing that's important? What am I doing things to? And you are. You are doing these things.
Thanks. I mean, what's funny is that because I'm doing what I really love and every aspect of my life is important to me and there's a level of passion that I have for every aspect of what I'm doing, I kind of wake up and I already know what I want to do. So I wake up kind of hyper, and I'm like, I have to do this, and this. But it's kind of like a good kind of energy that I have that it's always like about what's next in a positive way. So I like it. It's fun.
And that's great. I mean, reading about it, we all wish we had that all the time. But when you first would wake up in the morning after the accident, it had to be hard to realize I'm paralyzed. I mean, what did you feel like when you first woke up, and then when you finally realized what had happened? I mean, that realization has to be terrifying at first.
Yeah, I mean, at first I was thinking, like, you know, what the hell am I going to do now? You know, at first you're thinking, I can't get up, and
I can't imagine the nightmares you had about the whole accident.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of your brain takes over in that respect, because your brain is trying to, when you're sleeping, you inherently kind of shift your body because you're uncomfortable. When you're paralyzed, your body knows that it's not comfortable because you're getting other messages from your parasympathetic nervous system, but your brain cannot make your legs move. So you're bombarded with all of these different kind of signals, and I had horrible nightmares when I was in the ICU and when I was at the hospital, and I'd wake up screaming, and I still get really bad nightmares around the anniversary of my accident, when I wake up in the middle of the night and I can taste the chlorine in my lungs, and I feel like I can't breathe sometimes, but that kind of goes away.
We all have the sense, and I've done this myself. I had a major heart attack in February, and you think to yourself, what if I'd done something sooner? I mean, what if, that what if game, which is so horrifying to have to go. I mean, you got to get over that, and it's not easy sometimes, because your mind automatically goes to that. What, I should have done something, or I should have thought before. I mean, in your case, I should have thought before I jumped in the pool.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like the biggest idiot in the world. And a lot of people say, did this happen for a reason? And they come from a good place when they're saying that. But what they don't realize is when they get to go home and, you know, tuck their kids into bed and have dinner and go to sleep, you're stuck thinking and pondering what that question might mean. And to me, a lot of times, I would be left with, well, what did I do wrong to deserve this? What was my reason for the injury?
Yeah, and there's so much that must go through your head. That's the thing, you have to get past that.
Yeah.
But you seem to have, you seem to be in a good place right now.
Yeah, I mean,
with a lot of things. I mean, you're at, would you say you're at peace?
Yeah, I'm, yeah, definitely.
But how long did it take you? I mean, it took you 8 years. Obviously, it's been 8 years since the accident. I mean, but when's the first time that you realized you were at peace? How long has that been?
Oh, I don't know. 5 years after my injury?
5 years.
4 or 5 years after. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long time to be so, you know, I'm sure you had so many worries and stresses in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it takes a lot for me to go through a day. You know, I need assistance. I need people to help me out.
Is it still rough to go to the bathroom today?
Yeah, I mean, I can't go alone.
Right.
So, you know, that's one thing that, you know, if I could use my fingers, it would make things a lot easier, because just using your hands to, you know, to brush your teeth. Actually, I can brush my teeth now, but like...
Oh, really? That's nice.
To, you know, do anything. To take a shower on your own, when you can start to use your fingers and your hands, you can do almost anything alone.
That's great. That's great. I mean, to hear, I mean, all these little things that are coming back to you, and you go through the book, and there's one thing with the butt, with your butt, where you're telling everybody you can move your butt.
Oh yeah.
It's very humorous to read about, because a simple thing like that, it just makes you so joyful, and when you're reading the book, you feel that joy that you're feeling. And I mean, it feels so good to know that you're getting better, and you are. I mean, you're progressing. You seem to be progressing more and more each day. So you have so much to live for right now. I mean, that sense that, I mean, you really believe that you could be 100% at some point.
Yeah, but that's not what makes my life happy. You know, my life is happy right now too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not.
What could you have that you don't have, other than being able to walk? I mean, but what else?
What else do I want?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, do you have everything that you need right now to make you completely happy?
I mean, there's a sense of independence that people want, and I think anybody with a spinal cord injury can attest to that, is you definitely lose a sense of independence. You know, I don't drive my own car right now, and I really liked driving. So that's one thing that it would be nice to just get in the car and drive. You know, but that's such a simple thing. I mean, you know, I don't get hung up on that kind of stuff. But
why bother getting hung up on it? It all it does is bring you down. You have to deal with that, I guess, and And you've come to terms with it. And you come to terms with a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have no choice. So.
But in a positive way. I mean, you that's what I'm trying to tell you. You really seem to be really positive about a lot of different things. Despite the fact that you could have, there's lots of things you could be negative about.
Thanks.
And I think that's what comes through just talking to you and realizing that, I mean, that you definitely have a positive energy about a lot of things, and your motivation is just amazing. I mean, you find a way to do things no matter what it is.
What I wanted,
and nobody stopped you either.
Yeah. No.
That therapist is never going to stop you again.
I drink a lot of coffee, so, you know.
Oh, do you? Well, we just about run out of time. This has been really great to talk to you, and you're an inspiration to so many people. I mean, I'm just amazed. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It has been a pleasure to talk to you, and this has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.